Good evening, brethren. It is good to be together again. I appreciate this opportunity to be with you, to worship our God and Father in heaven and His Son, Jesus. And I appreciate and want to thank Lisa and Steve for having us over to their home and being with their family. We had a wonderful time, good food, and appreciate their hospitality. And I appreciate the right hand of fellowship that you've extended to me in the preaching of the gospel, being in your homes, and I've enjoyed the week thus far and looking forward to the rest of the week, Lord willing. And as Don said, that my wife and one of my daughters, Rebecca, is with us today, and I'm glad to have them here, and hopefully they'll be with me all week and might see some of my other children pop in and out, but between jobs and homes of their own now and things like that, may not see them as much as I would like. But again, it's good to have my family, and that's what I want to talk about for a while tonight is family and talk about marriage. But one other thing I want to say that might help explain a few things, not only of what we've done already, but for the rest of the week, a little bit of perspective. Technology is not my strong suit. I've been using PowerPoint for 2 weeks, and I've already messed it up tonight. So, you know, if you kind of see me run through PowerPoint rather roughly, that's a little bit of an explanation. But I was actually going to preach another sermon tonight, but when I went to put it on this computer, it wasn't there. So we're going to preach a different sermon that I had intended anyway, that I believe really is one of the most important things that we need to be focusing on today, and certainly our country, but also in our churches. You know, the home has been under assault for decades now. In our sermon yesterday, we talked about some of those things going back to the 50s and 60s. We know how divorce has racked our society. But not only that, it has affected our churches. And when God created Adam and Eve together, husband and wife in Genesis chapter 2, the thing about that is, that was before the sin, wasn't it? He created Eve, a helper suitable to Adam, and it was good. It was everything that God intended it to be, everything that it should be. And so problems entered in after sin. But you know, today, if you were to quiz people and ask, was marriage before Eden or after Eden? I think a lot of people would say, well, it was after Eden. It had to be one of those curses that God gave Adam and Eve because of their sin. But you know, it was before Eden, right? That was when things were right and things were perfect, that God gave that institution of marriage. And so that helps me understand what it should be, understand what marriage can be, that God intended that from the dawn of creation for the family unit to be the whole of society. And when we turn around and say, why are things such a mess today? Look at our homes. As goes the home, so goes society, right? And so some of those things that we saw in the 70s and 80s and to this day are that whirlwind that we talked about a little bit yesterday. But you know, in my secular work, we have a saying that, you know, sometimes you see somebody building something and they're building it incorrectly, and we say, if it's not broke, we'll fix it till it is. Well, that's sometimes the way marriage goes, right? When a young couple meets one another, they love each other deeply. They make that decision, that commitment to stand before God and man and say, I do, and their husband and wife, and they fully intend to live together till death do they part. But that's just like Eden, isn't it? That right there is like Genesis chapter 2, that everything is right and everything is perfect. And yeah, as newlyweds, there might be some bumps along the road, but for the most part, still starry-eyed and deeply, passionately in love with one another. And then down the road, we start to make mistakes that can affect a marriage. And we're all going to make mistakes in our marriage. Matter of fact, since Angela came along with me today, I can't make the claim that I've got all the answers and I've got it down pat and I'm perfect in it, because she can correct me and tell me or tell you that I certainly am not. So it's something that has to be worked at. Marriages, a good marriage, is something that continues to be strengthened and get deeper as the years go on, not the other way. I remember when Angela and I were dating, there was a couple at our home congregation. They're both dead and gone now, but when it was made public that we were going to get married, I'll never forget, after a Sunday morning service, a sister came up and she said, "It's not everything that it's cracked up to be." And the husband said something equal to that. Well, a few years later, we got married, had children, and we were preaching, and I'll leave towns out of it just so I don't maybe draw any connections or anything, but I was preaching in a town once a month traveling and got to know a preacher and his wife that preached in that same town and got pretty close with them. They had children about the same age as our children. And what we would do is go over on a Saturday, spend Saturday with them, oftentimes spend the night at their home, and then I would go and preach at one congregation. He would preach at the congregation he was working with, and we had a lot of fun times. But one thing that we saw, and as we got to know them more, there was a lot of fighting that would go on in front of us. And, you know, we've always had a good marriage. We hardly ever fight, and I'm thankful of that. And so that was kind of a new exposure to me, that not everybody has this nice, compatible marriage. And so, you know, even in the Lord's church, everything is not as it should be in all situations. But we have to work at those things, right? Yesterday, we went to 2 Peter chapter 1 and read the passage where it says that through the knowledge of God and Christ, it says that He's given us all things that pertain to life and godliness. All things that pertain to life and godliness. And so what does that mean? I've got the book right here. I've got the formula for a happy, successful marriage, don't I? If He's given us all things that pertain to life and godliness, it's here. I don't need to go to the bookshelf in the bookstore and, you know, go to where there's a slew of marriage help books and that type of stuff and try to find the answer there. And I'm not saying that there's not some good things and some things that can make us think in that literature. But if I believe what Peter said, all things that pertain to life and godliness, key to a happy marriage is right in the Bible, isn't it? Some of the most difficult and saddest things that I've dealt with in my years preaching the gospel has been marriages of members of the church that were not what they should have been. Marriages that were falling apart. Marriages that did fall apart. Souls that were lost because of divorce. And so I always try to preach not only at Winding Road, but in meetings that I go to about God's plan, design for marriage. I go at it a bunch of different ways, and tonight the way that I'm going to go about it is to look at a sermon titled Marriage Killers. And I've actually got 10 of these. I'm going to have to go through them pretty quickly. I'm glad Kevin only led one song. This is a two-part sermon that I'm going to try to wrap into one. But you know, there are things that can kill a marriage, right? There are things that do kill marriages, but keep in mind, no matter what happens in a marriage, through work, through going to the Scriptures, following the Scriptures, all things can be healed and forgiven and worked through. I've seen marriages that recovered from infidelity in some pretty extreme situations. I've seen marriages that have recovered from domestic violence. I sat across the table from a couple one time, and he had put his wife's head through the drywall. And these were members of the Lord's church. I heard her say in his presence right there, "I can't stand him. I do not want to see him. I don't want him to touch me." That was probably 7 years ago. They're still together. So things can recover, but we have to use Scripture. We have to use faith. We have to use the fruit of the Spirit to work through things such as that. Back in Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19. in verse 4. Jesus, when he was asked about the hot topic of the day, marriage, divorce, and remarriage, he went back to the very beginning, back to Genesis chapter 2. In Matthew chapter 19, starting in verse 4, "And he answered and said unto them, Have ye not read that he which have made them at the beginning made them male and female? And said, For this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." And so that was Jesus' answer to this question about divorce. What God has joined together, let not man put asunder. And we'll get back to this text a little bit. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time in Matthew chapter 19. But he did give that exception in verse 9. But you know, his disciples, they saw how serious it was, how restrictive it was, and they said, it's good that man not marry, if that's the way that it is. But it is a blessing of God that we need to take serious, because God was serious about it. Jesus was serious about it. The Hebrew writer in chapter 13 and verse 4 said, "Marriage is honorable in all, and the marriage bed undefiled. So it is an honorable institution. But no marriage is without or above problems. And if you ask yourself today, how would you grade your marriage? Good marriage? Mediocre marriage? Whatever, however you feel about it. Every marriage can be improved, can it? But both parties have to give 100% to the success of the marriage. Both have to do that. Wives can show more consistent respect and love for their husbands. Husbands can honor and love their wives more completely. A man asked me one time a lot of years ago, he said, "Keith, I want you to preach on Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25, where it says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it, because I really want to know what that means in its entirety." Well, when he said that, I thought, what a job. I felt inadequate to be able to say what that means in its entirety. And I believe I'm still learning what it means for husbands to love their wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. But you know, the more that I try to learn the depth of what that means, the better my marriage is going to be, and the more that's going to improve my marriage. So no matter how good it is, it can be improved. But let's look at 10 different ways to kill a marriage. One is to be untrue to one another. Verse 9 of Matthew 19, "And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery." Jesus shows that infidelity is a very serious thing. It's so serious that it is the only thing that can separate that marriage bond. And because it's so serious, there's only one exception given, right? For the innocent to remarry. And so when we see how serious that is, unfaithfulness, we better stay completely away from anything that looks like it, anything that will lead to it, that might tempt us to that, that we need to be so careful about it. You know, there are things in your life that I'm sure that you fear. I hate getting shocked by electric. And I get around it quite a bit because of my work. When I'm around electric, I'm very, very careful. Matter of fact, I'll call an electrician so I don't have to mess with it, because I don't want to be shocked. There's something in your life that I'm sure that you're afraid of, and you don't want anywhere around that. We ought to be that same way with anything and anybody that might tempt us, that might cause us to flirt, to establish a tie that is improper. That ought to be more careful about that than the thing that we are afraid of in life the most. We ought to be afraid of unfaithfulness. And be like Paul told Timothy, flee youthful lust. I'm sure that we've been afraid of something that we've fled before. Turn around and run is what he's saying, right? Don't get anywhere near it. Let's turn back to 1 Peter chapter 3 for a moment. 1 Peter chapter 3, and starting in verse 1, and this is a very interesting and complete passage as it talks about marriage. 1 Peter 3 and verse 1 says, "Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation of their wives, while they behold your chaste conversation," and again, that word conversation means manner of living, "they behold your chaste manner of living coupled with fear, whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair, the wearing of gold, the putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, and that which is not corrupt, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner in the old time the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection to their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, and are not afraid with any amazement." Pause there for just a moment. Peter's been pretty hard on the wives, hasn't he? Talking about subjection and their conduct and those type of things. But he turns to us husbands now in verse 7 and says, "Likewise ye husbands." All right, our responsibility is just the same as theirs. We have 100% responsibility. They have 100% responsibility to do their job. And Peter goes on and says, "Dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered." I want to focus for a minute on that, giving honor unto the wife. You know, in Peter's words to the wife, looking back for just a second, what does he say? Don't do anything in your conduct, in your dress, that would draw the attention of men to you. Now, he really doesn't get that same specifics about men as far as maybe looking at women, right? But really, he does. When he says in verse 7, giving honor unto the wife, whether consciously or unconsciously, before impropriety or infidelity occurs, either one. There are a lot of things that go on that, yes, it may not be, we may not say, well, that's adultery, that's infidelity, but there are a lot of things that go on up to that point that are wholly and totally improper and ought not to have even gotten started. That before that occurs, one has already devalued their mate in their heart, giving honor unto the wife as the weaker vessel. That when I'm at work or wherever it might be, whenever that temptation is there, that situation, that when I decide to look or talk or flirt or establish a bond, whatever it might be, that when I do that, I've dishonored my mate. They may not even know it. They may not even be hurt by it. But I've already dishonored my mate when I've done that. Because marriage is exclusive, isn't it? It is exclusive, and no one is allowed to intrude into it. Nobody's allowed there. Just the husband and the wife only. No emotional ties, no connections at all. You know, let's go back to Proverbs chapter 7 for a moment. Proverbs chapter 7. And we'll start reading in verse 24. "Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths, for she hath cast down many wounded. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death." Infidelity at any level breaks trust, it defiles purity, and it courts disaster, doesn't it? And sometimes maybe in sport, maybe our jobs, we were actually talking about this a little bit ago at the dinner table, about sometimes in construction or sports that we play, we get kind of maybe on the edge of danger. And that might be okay, even though other people are saying, what? You shouldn't do that. Be careful. You know, I can't watch you when you're doing that. Well, in sports or work, we might have to do that. We might take risks in our work, but you know, that's something we don't dare mess with. What's the proverb writer say? Can a man take fire into his bosom and not be burned? Rhetorical question. He absolutely cannot be. And no matter how careful you think you are and that you're going to be, you take fire into your bosom, you're going to get burned. And you know, we might think, well, it didn't go any further. It didn't go any further than flirting. It didn't go any further than a friendship that maybe was a little bit too close. Well, again, you've already dishonored your mate when that occurs. You know, God's will is your holiness. And you keeping your holiness will help your mate keep her holiness, or vice versa. You know, there are so many connections out there because of that thing called a computer. You know, that Facebook or all those sites you can connect on, be very careful about those things. Be so, so careful about the pornography that is on our computers. Be so careful about that, what they call cyber sex. It is impure, it is improper, it is sin. And you can't take that into your bosom without being burned. Beware of what movies you watch. The entertainment that you choose. Hollywood glorifies fornication. They glorify immorality. They glorify adultery. And too many times people pay, Christians pay to watch that. It causes problems in marriage. One last passage on this point, back in Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. For which thing's sake the children of God cometh, for which thing the sake of wrath of God cometh on the children of disobedience. What did Paul say about lust? You got to put it to death. You got to kill it. And no matter what form, what shape it comes on, you've got to kill it. It is so important that you put that to death. Another marriage killer is being overly jealous of one another. You know, a lot of years ago, a young lady, a member of the church, came to our home. She was in a situation where her and her husband were divorced. And she came to Angela and I. And basically what she was looking for is an excuse to remarry. Young, had a young family, nice girl. She came and she wanted to talk about some of the doctrines that were floating around there. And she basically was looking for an excuse. She wanted me as a preacher to tell her that she had the right to remarry. But when we talked, I had to go to 1 Corinthians 7 and said, your option is to reconcile or remain unmarried. And which at that time, she started weeping bitterly. And she said, I never will. I never will go back to him. She literally hated the man that she once loved. And as we talked about what destroyed their marriage, it was this right here. There hadn't been unfaithfulness. There hadn't been abuse. There hadn't been neglect in the sense of not supporting her or their children. But every time the wife would go out, he had to know what time she was going to be home. And if she was a minute late, he was just really, really tearing into her, accusing her of many different things. Spending money. We'll actually get to that money part here in a little bit. But spending money. She would have to give an account of the money that she spent, and she better have exact change, and she better have a receipt. And since she didn't have exact change, he accused her of spending it drinking coffee with a man. He just had this fixation of jealousy towards his wife. And it worked for years to the point that it eroded their marriage, that there was no love left. It had effectively killed their marriage. Sad, sad situation. Let's turn back to James chapter 3. James chapter 3, and starting in verse 14. James 3 and verse 14. It says, "But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of the righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." You know, I think sometimes we take these passages and we apply them towards our brethren, don't we? We take these passages and we put it in a church environment. And sometimes we stand back and say, wait a minute, I'm supposed to apply that in my marriage? Absolutely. Absolutely. Matter of fact, maybe first, I ought to apply that to my marriage and to my home, as well as my brethren. Because my wife sees me 7 days a week. My brethren oftentimes only see me on Sunday and only see me on Wednesday. But my wife sees me 7 days a week. And if I'm harboring envy and jealousy and strife in my heart towards her, you know what I'm doing is every time that that manifests itself in a fight or some comment that is unkind and unloving, what I'm doing is eroding marriage, right? And it's getting shallower and shallower every time I do it. To the point that, again, sometimes in some situations, there's no love left. I remember having to explain to a guy one time, I said, well, the problem is that as marriage is being eroded and love is being eroded because of improper behavior, no matter how and what it manifests itself, you know what also is happening? There's something being built up as love is being torn down. What's being built up is a wall of resentment. And try to scale that wall and overcome it. That's almost impossible. Kind of like Jesus said about that demon, it only comes out by prayer and fasting. And so again, we need to be careful. Another marriage killer is nagging one another to no end. You know, think about that in your home. Wives, do you nag your husbands? Husbands, do you nag your wives? Well, stop doing that. Home needs to be a peaceful place. Home needs to be a place of rest and respite and love and tranquility. Home is where we need to go at the end of the day to rest from strife and from difficulties from the world. Not where we leave the workplace and say, do I have to go home? I don't want to go home because I know what it's like there. Is there more strife in our home than there is in our work? Well, that's not just something that, is a habit that is okay to have in our homes, and that, you know, that's the way a lot of marriages are, so it's just okay. God will accept it. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 19. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. You know, oftentimes nagging comes about and exhibits itself because of self-seeking. And matter of fact, if you think about most of the things that we're going to put up here tonight, have their root in selfishness. And when people are nagging, typically it's because they're thinking of self, not thinking of the other person. And isn't that the heart of our faith? Isn't that the heart of us being children of God, is to think about the other person before we think about ourselves? You know, we read passages in the Bible about contentiousness, and we talk about peace and tranquility and unity in the church. But it's okay in the home, right? No, it's not okay. It's not okay in the home. And if that's the way that your home is, the Lord doesn't want it that way. He doesn't want it in the church, and we know that. Why would He want it in our homes? Let's go back to the wise man, Solomon. Proverbs chapter 19. Proverbs chapter 19 and verses 13. A foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a woman are a continual dropping. Let's also go a couple chapters over, chapter 21 and verse 9. It is better to dwell in the corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. Also verse 19. It is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. Now, you think about it and think Solomon was pretty hard on the ladies, wasn't he? And you think, why doesn't he say anything about the men there? Well, it's because he's a man. He's not about to. But you know, it goes the other way, doesn't it? Because when you think about that brawling, that quarreling, that constant fighting, what is Solomon saying? Even though he does, yes, talk about women in that, basically he's saying nobody wants to be around it. And that you'd better rather live on a rooftop, which, you know, I've been on a whole lot of roofs in my lifetime, and I've never been on a roof and thought, boy, this is a comfortable place. I really like being on this steep pitch thing or this hot roof, and I really like being up here. What is he saying? It's more comfortable than being in the house where there's contention. But it goes the other way. If I'm the nagger, if I'm the one who's contentious, my wife would probably rather live on the rooftop than with me, and vice versa. It goes both ways. God doesn't want our homes to be a place of fighting and a place of yelling and a place of quarrels, because it kills communication. It kills affection. And it causes isolation. We need to be willing to yield for the sake of peace. And that's what we read in James chapter 3. And do it without bitterness in our hearts. Do it with gentleness, without hypocrisy, making peace. And so be a peacemaker in your marriage, not one that is brawling and quarrelsome. Another way to kill a marriage is show no affection for your spouse. You know, in Genesis chapter 2, let's just read that quickly in verses 23 and 24. Genesis 2, 23, 24 says, "And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." You know, when you read that, you read affection, don't you? You read fondness. That they were to be fond of one another. Husbands, your wife ought to be your best friend. Wives, your husband ought to be your best friend. Young people that are newlyweds, or maybe you're not quite newlyweds, but you're not yet oldlyweds, make sure that your spouse is your best friend. Nurture that. Husbands, do what she likes occasionally. Wives, do what he likes occasionally. Spend time together. You know, when I think about my marriage, and you know, Angela is my best friend. And for the most part, we like the same thing. But I've had to endure some of the things that she likes. You know, even sometimes I try not to let her see my eyes roll. But she sure has endured a lot of things that I like. But we found those things that we like together. And sometimes it's kind of funny. We'll have gone through a busy period in life. And, you know, things will be hectic and crazy, and that's our typical routine anyway. But we'll find ourselves, either I'll say it or she'll say it, I want to go away just with you and me. And we'll both be feeling the same thing at the same time. Long to be with one another. Be fond of one another. You know, when I think of David and Michael, that story, and we don't have time to go into it in the Old Testament, that when they started their marriage, you saw love. You even saw Michael taking some risks for David against her father, King Saul. And they deeply, passionately loved one another. But then some problems happened because of Saul. Some tragic things happened in their marriage. And you remember after she saw him dancing before the Lord and she rebuked him, the rest of their marriage was over, wasn't it? You know what I think the problem was there again? Yes, tragic things had happened. But one thing that you see with David and Michael in that situation is they stopped courting one another, didn't they? And sometimes that's what happens in marriages, is there's no affection shown because the wife stops courting the husband and the husband stops courting the wife. And you didn't stop courting the day that you said, I do. You need to keep courting. All your life, court your wife. Show her that fondness and that affection. Another way to kill a marriage. Never agree on how to raise your children. You know, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12, in verse 25, he said, a divided house falls. And Jesus knew their thoughts and said unto them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. And when it comes to raising children, we need to be united, need to work together. If nothing else, present a united front in the battle of raising children until you can retire to the privacy of your bedroom and work it out so that you agree on how children are going to be raised, because if children see it, they're going to capitalize on that, right? Mom and dad don't agree with one another. And that's going to cause more problems, not only just in raising children, but that'll cause problems between mom and dad. Cause problems in the marriage, and again, start that what? That eroding. Depending on how it manifests itself and carries out, up goes the wall of bitterness, that wall of envy. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, Paul said, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Fathers, be the leader in your home. Be the leader in bringing your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Set the tone and set the right tone. And wives, support your husband in every way. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. We teach and correct. You know, let's go back to the Old Testament. Several passages in the Psalms that I want to look at. And they're close together so we can hit them all pretty quick. But go back to Psalm 13. Psalm 13. And verse 4. Actually, I think I've got the wrong verse there because there's not a yes. Let's go to chapter 19 of Psalm. Psalm 19. And no, I have to apologize. I've got quite a few incorrect ones. Psalm 22. Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 13. I knew things weren't looking right. Took me a little while to figure out what it was. Proverbs 13 and 24.